Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to 30 Minutes of Wisdom for Friday, February 24th, 2012. This is Gregory Mascari from Bozeman, Montana, and I certainly want to thank you and everyone for joining us here on our live call or on the replay. And you know, Robin and I started these regular weekly 30 Minute of Wisdom calls as our way of paying it back, or in some regards really paying it forward, for all of the amazing people we've been blessed to meet, the lessons we've learned, the wisdom we've garnered over the years and really over the decades. And it's certainly our intention with these Friday morning 30 Minute of Wisdom calls to create a safe space where people from all professions, backgrounds, and companies can come together and dip into the well of wisdom with some of the most forward-thinking authors, speakers, trainers, and really enlightened beings all across the world today. So at this time, I'd like to turn our call over to my partner in life and enlightened networker, Robin Blank Mascari.
Well, thank you, Gregory, and truly thank you for our partnership, for all the support to make this happen, to share these wonderful, wonderful guests and have this program, 30 Minutes of Wisdom, to support all of us. And I do say all of us because I've received so much from listening to these great people. And thank you, everyone. Welcome to, and thank you for taking the time for yourself and to participate in our growing enlightened networking community and experience our great speakers. Today, our topic is our identity, how it serves us and limits us. And I am deeply touched because our guest today is one of the earliest pioneers in the personal development and experiential training industry. And through his leadership, millions and millions around the world have been influenced by his work. Over 1.3 million have graduated from his specific programs, but I know personally that his work has influenced and transformed the lives of everyone that has been touched by those 1.3 plus million people. When I was first visiting with him, realized that we've been in kind of a similar world and have some of the same friends, although he's a new friend in my life. He was on the board with John Denver and Tom Crum at the Windstar Foundation, and I was active early on back in the 70s. They were educating people for a sustainable future. And that was really the first time I ever heard that term, and now take a look at our world. So he's truly one of the early adopters and earliest pioneers in our life and world today. So his commitment has been about, you know, making this a world that works for everyone. And he's been actively supporting numerous global organizations. He's been involved in leadership development at the personal and organizational level. He's lived all over the world. He's inspired groups from some of the largest organizations and influenced some of the greatest leaders, whether it be YPO, the Young Presidents Organization, the World Business Academy. He's been in Japan and Hong Kong and from Aspen to Singapore. I am deeply touched because I didn't personally know him until I was introduced to him by a mutual friend who was one of our special guests, Doug Krug. And then when I realized who I was talking to, I was even more touched because I have been touched by his work and who he is and the influence he's had on our planet. So I am really, really grateful to have him this morning as our guest, and I want to welcome Robert White.
Robin, good morning. It's great to be with you and your listeners.
Oh, thank you so much, Robert. Well, being one of those early, early pioneers, this is before people even thought about this kind of work in personal and experiential training. What actually got you launched in doing this kind of work?
Robin, I was a struggling entrepreneur, a small sales company, and a friend of mine who was in a similar business went to the Mind Dynamics seminar. This was the forerunner to LifeSpring and Est and CyWorld and, you know, all of those companies. And he came back from the seminar raving about it, but more importantly, I saw the changes, the really positive, significant changes in his life. So eventually I attended the seminar, and it sounds like a cliche all these years later, but it changed my life. And I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what happened to me, much less understand what was actually happening in that room in terms of the methodology and the approach and the underlying spirit of the whole experience. But I knew what was happening for me. My relationships improved. My business tripled in the year following that that training. And I started enrolling friends and family and then people in my sales force. And then eventually I enrolled a lot of people. So even though I was not aware very much of Mind Dynamics as an organization, I learned later they knew about me. And that led to my becoming president of Mind Dynamics. And, you know, we're going to talk about identity today. And my identity at that time was, okay, I'm the business guy. I'm the sales guy that's being brought in to put butts in seats. That was how I held myself initially in the work. But Alexander Everett, the founder of Mind Dynamics, and one of my great teachers in my life, you know, he just kind of pounded away at this lump of clay or granite, maybe would be the better metaphor, and, you know, got me into the instructor's class and then got me reading in a different way and sitting with some really exciting people in the, you know, the days of the early human potential movement. And then when I left Mind Dynamics and founded LifeSpring, that really accelerated it. We were able to, you know, start doing some of the things we had been wanted to do. Alexander was very rigid about the training program, so we weren't allowed to change it at all. And with LifeSpring, that, you know, we were freed to do what we really wanted to do. And I learned a whole lot more. So that's kind of how I got involved. And then after selling LifeSpring, I, you know, went to Asia and further developed the work and started to lead from the front of the room. Even though I only did that for about a year and a half, it was a significant life experience for me. Anyway, that's part of my story.
Well, you know, it's so fun for me because I go back to those early days, and I did get to experience Alexander, and I did get to experience the S training and that strictness, and everyone that went to LifeSpring had so much more fun and more of a lasting impact with community, and I wish I would have done your program instead of the one I did. And you've gone on to touch so many people in the corporate world and in the nonprofit world, and you've got this fabulous book on living an extraordinary life. Would you talk about ARC? Because a lot of people, you know, when you boil it down to some three kind of basic words that create the extraordinary life, your book is, and for everyone to know, Robert's book is called Living an Extraordinary Life, Unlocking Your Potential for Success, Joy, and Fulfillment. And he's got it broken down into some real wonderful basics that are simple but not easy, right?
That's one of the famous quotes from the book, I guess. I do believe that life is simple, and I do believe it's not easy. You know, when we were building the business originally in Japan, we were sending trainers to America to study with one of my other mentors in my life, John Enright. John Enright was seminal in that contribution to EST and to LifeSpring and to our company in Asia. So we were sending our trainers there for advanced training, and his training was called ARC, A-R-C. And when they would come back, I would debrief them, and they were all getting tremendous value from spending time with John, as I have over the years. And I miss him desperately. Just, I really miss him in my life. At the same time, I had these three different businesses in Japan. One was a sales training business. One was the public transformational training business. One was a consulting firm. They all had different names. And I went to this presentation by the founder of Sony, co-founder of Sony, and he talked about the importance of having a brand that was a name that where you could really focus all your efforts on this one name, in his case, Sony. And so I went back to my office and I was thinking about, well, what would capture everything that we're doing? And what I realized is that my understanding of John Enright's work, which was about awareness, responsibility, and communication, was really the basis of everything we were doing. That if you can awaken yourself, if you can develop what my former wife calls a higher state of noticing in your life, and stop seeing things the way you've always seen them, if you can take personal responsibility in a really rigorous way and get off the victim train, really realize the power of choice, and then finally develop a mastery level of communication, and that includes listening, that includes speaking, it includes writing, it includes sensing and feeling, it includes understanding body language, you know, everything about communication. That if you can do those three things in your life with greater effectiveness and practice them more consciously, everything can change for you. You become your own best trainer. You become your own best seminar. That life becomes showing up as a learning experience. So that was that's why we named the company ARC, that company, and eventually we were the largest training company in Asia and a fairly large presence in corporate culture change training in America. But it was all based on the acronym of awareness, responsibility, and communication. And that's what I built my book around also.
And I remember, because I lived in the Bay Area during those times, and watching and viscerally experiencing for myself, first we have to have the awareness and then take responsibility. And when people made that shift, lives changed forever, forever, forever.
Yes.
So you had...
It's magical.
What?
It's magical.
It's a little thing that makes the biggest difference. It's the simple but not easy. But when people have that wake up, and I was living in the Bay Area right at the hotbed of it all during those times, and I got to, it was like popcorn popping all around me with people that were immersed in your trainings. And so you had this international organization, awareness, responsibility, communication, and what happened? And what did you learn?
Robin, great stories have, it's difficult to tell where they began and where they end. But for me, it was that I had worked full time since I had been 14 years old. And the typical entrepreneur, quite often the 7-day weeks and the long days. In doing that, I had my family had sacrificed a lot. I had sacrificed a lot, and I'd missed a lot in life by doing that. I mean, I think I accomplished a lot, but I'd also missed a lot. And when I returned to America in the mid '80s. One of the opportunities that opened up for me was we did this training for John Denver and the Winstar Foundation staff and board. We did a 5-day experience with them. And so out of that developed a friendship with John. And then, he asked me to come on the board. And so now I'm going to Aspen once a month. And my then wife and I just fell in love with Aspen. And so we moved. We moved to Aspen. We built a big house and we had 2 birth children. We adopted 2 special needs kids. We skied a lot. We traveled a lot. And we built a family. And I didn't work all the time. So the good news of that, and I don't regret the 13 years that I spent in Aspen. I learned and grew, and I did everything on my bucket list. The bad news about it was that I lost touch with my business. And I learned that it's like the intersection between kind of a spiritual conversation and a very pragmatic one. I learned that in a professional services company, if you're not there functioning as a thought leader in front of the 240 people in our company, they start making up stuff about you. You're just the rich guy in Aspen living off the sweat of their brow. And what that led to was me losing touch with my own business and eventually losing the business worldwide. So that was a wake-up call. And speaking of identity, when you go from a rich guy in Aspen to a guy struggling to make a living, it gives you the opportunity to find out who you really are once again and what it is that you have to contribute.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. And I think many people have been through something similar but different. And I remember, and actually I was working with Tom Crum and realizing that quote from Dag Hammarskjöld that is... it is of more significance to commit yourself to one person than to slaver diligently for the salvation of the masses. And it sounds like you had that wake-up call that I think a lot of people have when their families and their health suffers because their devotion to, something else. And it's a tough one to make that shift. So let's talk a little bit more about how our identity serves us and limits us, because it sounds like you've really been through that journey at a deep, deep level.
Yeah, I have a favorite story that I've been sharing with folks recently. It's not about me, it's about someone else. But for you and for your listeners, I'd like you to imagine a scene. This is a true story, by the way. And the scene takes place in East Hampton, New York, during the summer. if you've been there, you know, it's an incredible summer resort, and some of the wealthiest people in the world are there, and a very active street scene. So it's a guy and his 13-year-old daughter are walking down the street, holding hands, swinging arms, giant smiles on their face on a beautiful summer day. And it had been a father-daughter day. They had been out on his boat. They had had just this wonderful experience. And they were going to finish their day the way they had always finished their father-daughter days since she was a little tiny girl, which was to go have ice cream together. So you got the picture? You know, couldn't have been better. And while they're walking down the street, he's so happy that he breaks into song. So the question I ask audiences is, what's the reaction of the 13-year-old girl when her dad breaks into song on the sidewalk in busy East Hampton, New York? And, you know, the answers come back pretty obviously. Well, you know, she wasn't very happy, you know. And, you know, what she actually did was she said, "Stop it, Dad, you're embarrassing me." And the more interesting question, I think, for me and you and for the listeners on this call is, what was his reaction? You know, he goes from just screamingly happy to this daughter's caustic, critical tone, "Stop it, Dad, you're embarrassing me." So what's his reaction? And in audiences, you know, the answers come back, well, and some of them, by the way, are like me, he would sing louder. You know, because that's what I would do, and did do with my children. Other people say, well, he would go silent, or perhaps he would apologize. And what he actually did was he snapped back at her and yelled at her.
Ouch.
And it led to a year and a half estrangement from his daughter. And just broke his heart. Now, the good news is he got into therapy, and that's why we know this story, because he has shared it. But the piece of the story that I haven't shared with you that's just amazing is that the guy was Billy Joel.
Wow.
You know, my experience of Billy Joel was when they did the Two Pianos tour with Elton John, you know, an intimate group of 18,000 people, you know, in a big arena. A guy that just captures the stage and holds people's attention and all that talent. And, of course, for all the dads out there, you know, here's some forgiveness. Even Billy Joel gets told to stop singing by his 13-year-old daughter. So, you know, even one of the best singers in the world. But what he learned about himself was that this identity that served him so well, that allowed him to get up on stage in front of 18,000 people and just hold people's attention magnetically, that same identity failed him with the single most important person in his life at that time. Because when she said, "Stop it, Dad, you're embarrassing me," the way he received it was that she was criticizing his singing, the very thing that he was, you know, that was the basis of his identity. And so the point about that is that all of our identities, for each of us, we build them up because they serve us. We don't have to stop and think about who we are all the time in every situation. So, you know, they're convenient. They allow us to exist in the world in a kind of more efficient way, almost, in a more relaxed way. But at the same time, every identity that I've ever been able to identify about myself has also had its limitations. And this is that awareness, responsibility, and communication piece in action for me. You know, I had an identity for years of being the learner, the guy who sat at the feet of Alexander Everett and Werner Erhard and Dr. John Jones and Dr. John Enright. I was the guy learning, and it really served me well, and it kept me humble. It kept me learning and growing, but it had a downside because I wasn't stepping forward. You know, I built those businesses from behind the scenes. Nobody knew who I was, and because I had that identity of being the guy behind the scenes. And then I went to Aspen and became the rich guy in Aspen, you know, the guy that didn't work and had a lot of fun and served on the nonprofit boards and raised his kids. And then when that went away, I had to look again at who am I really? And by the way, that rich guy in Aspen identity had tremendous advantages. I made some huge contributions, and I did a lot of healing of myself. You know, there were a whole lot of positives to it. But there were some huge negatives also. And when that ended, in a kind of shocking way, I had the incredible opportunity to look again at, you know, what is my identity and what is it that I'm, my real purpose in living and being on the planet. So I think that's a big opportunity for people. Somebody asked me about my executive coaching work, and I said, I started talking about what I do, and they said, oh, that's therapy. And I said, no, you know, I work with the normally neurotic.
I want to quote you on that one.
And, you know, I work with people like me and you, you know, in these developed economies, these democracies, both West and East, you know, we don't have to worry about survival, really, and yet we do. And we don't have to worry about affiliation, and yet we do. And, you know, we get a little crazed about stuff that really doesn't matter. You know, you talk to most of our problems with some bushman in the interior of Australia or a tribal chieftain in Africa, and they look at you like, are you out of your mind? That's a problem? Excuse me? You know, but that's my piece about identity. I just think having an awareness of what our identity is and how it both serves us and limits us is one of those things that deserves awareness, and then taking personal responsibility for it, and then communicating with the important people in our lives about it. That's a lot of the attention that I have a chapter in a new book. It isn't my book, but I did write a chapter for it, a book that borrowed a little bit from my book's title in some ways. It's called Ordinary Men, Extraordinary Lives, Defining Moments, where 40 different men talk about some life challenges and how they address them and what they've learned. It's a quite amazing little book, actually, and if somebody has interest in it, just email me and I'll send you the details. It's robert@extraordinarypeople.com. But what I chose to write about in that book was identity, about my journey. That's what my chapter is about.
Well, it's so beautiful. Thank you. Because, you know, someone of your stature that has, you know, been such a pioneer and been all over the boards to share your story, I think, is in such a humble way and such a transparent way, is such a gift for so many people that are, you know, taking that day-by-day journey and wondering, does it make a difference? And so to have someone like you, you know, having been through so much and touched so many people, but really you keep working on yourself. So now where are you, Robert? And now what's next for you?
Well, a few years ago, I was coming back from literally the memorial service for my great teacher, Dr. John Jones, from San Diego to Denver. I'm on the airplane, and I'm thinking, well, now all three of my major mentors in my life have died. And what I realized was that I had to shift from being the learner to being the teacher. So a lot of what I'm doing now is it's about giving back and contributing whatever it is I've learned in this journey to people. And, you know, I work primarily with people in growth companies around their normally neurotic issues, around getting past the blocks and barriers that they've created in their life or that have, you know, come along. You know, it's that whole idea that for most people, creating their future means, you know, grabbing up all this stuff in their past and trying to throw that into the future. So they're really not creating anything new. And even very successful people are still dealing with blame or shame or regret or guilt or even their success and getting past it to create what's really possible for them as human beings, as producers and in the economy, as parents, as community leaders. So working with those people is a delight for me. I love what they're doing in the world. Of course, I'm still promoting my book and doing more writing. I should mention, and you asked me to mention, that I do offer this free weekly e-zine called An Extraordinary Minute with Robert White, where I promise that they can read it in 1 minute or less, and where we attempt to share a little bit of wisdom once a week, and it's free. And they can sign up for that at extraordinarybook.com.
Okay. So Extraordinary People and Extraordinary Book, are those two different websites?
Two different, but they accomplish the same thing. The Extraordinary Book one, you know, has a more of a single focus, which is selling my book.
Okay,
but in both
great.
Of them, you have the both of them, you have the opportunity to sign up for my e-zine. It's free. And you also get a 21-page report that I kind of have spent 30 years developing called Simple Truths and Enduring Values. It's the eight principles that our trainings have been built around for years.
Well, that's great. So the e-zine is an extraordinary minute, and you can register at extraordinarybook.com to get that and that report. You know, Robert, our world is different than it was when you started doing your work. And our audience that we have here is truly an extraordinary group of people that are really wanting to continue working on themselves and making contribution in the world. What kind of wisdom would you like to share with our audience here? Because these are people that are, you know, open and receptive and constantly learning and working on themselves. What do you think are some of the most important things that we can be paying attention to right now?
I think, so this is maybe a little bit of a far-out comment, but I believe that there's a very special generation of people on the planet right now. And they're, I'm not sure of the exact age range here, but I'm going to say from 18 to 30 or 35. Somehow the universe has somehow worked out so that this very special cohort of very wise young people are on the planet right now. This is not something of the future. This is right now. When I interact with my young adult children and their friends, I'm blown away by the wisdom that they have that didn't come from a book, that didn't come from a university class. In fact, it almost, it's speaking of magical, and it's amazing. I think for many people that have had some experience with the transformational movement or the human potential movement, I think it's time for us to go to those young people and share with them and get engaged with them, find out what they know, but also let them know what we know. And because, you know, we really do have a lot of wisdom to share, and we also still have a lot to learn. And if we go into that interaction thinking that we're just the gurus, we're just the teachers, I think that those conversations are designed to fail. But if we go in around a mutual learning and a mutual sharing, I think that's a role that all of us need to play. I'm disturbed that we have wandered into what is largely an entitlement culture, a victim culture. And that just shows up for me every day. I thought 30 years ago, I remember sitting around a big table at the Spinnaker in Sausalito, California, with Werner Erhard and John Hanley and Tom Wilhite and Stuart Emery, all these people that went on to really play leadership roles in terms of reaching people. And I must admit, there was a considerable amount of very nice California wine consumed that night. But the main theme was, what are we going to do in 10 or 20 years? Because by that time, we will have trained everybody in these ideas. We'll have a transformed society. Our work will be showing up in schools and corporations and prisons and everywhere, and we'll be out of work. No kidding. We were that naive and that enthusiastic and that young, I guess. Today, I think the work is needed more than ever, and I think the leverage is that audience that's in their 20s and early 30s. That came onto the planet somehow with an opening for truly creating a world that works for all of its people.
Mm. Oh, boy. I've been sitting here in tears because you touched a chord.
Well, I'm sorry if I
wonderful
disabled you, Robin.
it's where I've been drawn, and so I didn't expect that. I have a half a dozen young ones in that age range that I've been spending time with because I'm in awe of who they are and
yes.
The wisdom they have and the sense of responsibility to contribute to our world. And so I feel very strongly to really have freedom in my life to support them with some of the experience and background I have, but also be a student of theirs because I'm deeply moved by who they be and their vision for what they're doing in the world, and, you know, really kind of cleaning up the mess that a lot of us created. So I look forward to having more conversations with you about that. So I'm noticing our time, we're at the end of our 30 minutes of wisdom with Robert White this morning, and I want to thank you for, you know, all that you've done in the world and the people you've touched and that you're continuing to embody and model, you know, someone who is truly living an extraordinary life. And people can reach Robert through his book, Living an Extraordinary Life, Unlocking Your Potential for Success, Joy, and Fulfillment. Please, you know, we invite you all to receive his free weekly e-zine, An Extraordinary Minute, and you can register at extraordinarybook.com and reach out what did you call the neurotically?
The normally neurotic.
Yeah, I love it. Robert is doing executive coaching for great leaders. Gregory, do you have anything you want to share?
Well, I am just touched, Robert. You know, we have all been on this parallel path, and we're all swept up with the initial thrust of, you know, the growth we were experiencing back in the 70s and 80s. But as you have said, this new wave of enlightened beings that has blessed this planet, and we are blessed to have several of them as our children, continually keeps us in awe. And, you know, the collective wisdom that is going to change and build the new age and the new culture for America and the world is happening right before us. We all get to be a part of it. And it's such an honor to have such a cornerstone pioneer on the call with us here today. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
It's my great pleasure. I really admire what you guys are up to. And I think you're an example of how this work is going to take different forms in the future and that you're part of creating that. So I wanted to acknowledge and thank you also. It's been a delight to be with you.
Thank you so much. So at this time, we're going to complete our recording part of our 30 Minutes of Wisdom. And Robert has agreed to stand for a few minutes for any kind of response and Q&A. So at this time, we want to thank each and every one of you for listening, whether you're listening live or on the recorded call or on the website. And we will complete our 30 Minutes of Wisdom. Thank you, Robert White.